This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
Now, without any further ado, let's go straight into Ask an Astronomer Time, and answering your questions is Dr. Tim O'Brien. Thanks again for coming in and answering questions.
Okay.
Now, we had a special question for you. It actually came from somebody calling you up.
Yeah, I just thought I'd throw this one in. It wasn't actually from a Jodcast listener, so I know I'm cheating, but I thought it was sort of interesting since we quite commonly get these sort of phone calls about lights in the sky, and of course the implication being that are they related to some sort of extraterrestrial alien activity.
Yes.
And this particular one, it was funny because I'd just been talking about it to somebody else, referring back to a phone call I'd had from a journalist. Earlier towards the end of last summer, and I've just been mentioning it to somebody, telling the story. Anyway, earlier this week, that same journalist rang me back again, and it turned out it was a continuation of the story. So what happened was the original call was about seeing a light in the sky that was unusual, unidentified, flying, therefore an unidentified flying object. And in fact, there'd been a video posted on YouTube of this thing. And sure enough, it looked pretty weird. It was a sort of glowing orange thing that sort of appeared over the rooftop of a house down the street on this video and sort of moved slowly across the sky, sort of from left to right, upwards from left to right. And then another one appeared from roughly the same direction and followed along, and then another one appeared, and so on. And at the time, I was sort of discussing, the usual sorts of issues that, of course, we can't not necessarily tell what these things were, and always the difficulty in terms of how fast they're moving and how far away they are, and this sort of thing. And actually, it was just when I put the phone down that I realised what it was. I suspected I realised what it was, which was that. That it was one of these lanterns, I don't know if you've ever seen them, like paper balloons.
Oh, right.
And you light a candle in the base of it, and the heat from the candle inflates this paper balloon, basically, and it takes off. And they're a lovely thing to set off at night, and I first saw these in Thailand a few years ago, and they're becoming increasingly popular in this country. And in fact, so that was my explanation for the last summer's example, and I saw one at New Year actually in Manchester, and this guy rang me back, and it turned out he was describing exactly the same thing. People have been reporting them, and I said to him, I'm as sure as you can be about anything that that's what these things are. And in fact, the signature of them is that they look a bit like they are on fire. They're sort of glowing orange,
right.
And they drift quite slowly. They rise. And then you often get a sequence of them, because obviously whoever's setting them off is obviously setting off more than one, one after the other, and you get this sort of irregular sequence, and they tend to follow the same path because obviously it's the prevailing wind and they're rising and drifting. And then, and I said, and did the first one in the chain disappear first? Oh, yeah. And then the others carried us. Of course, that one's burning out and so on. So that's what it is. So, I mean, I guess if we were sort of sitting in... maybe this is a common thing in Southeast Asia particularly, I guess maybe that's where it's come from. If we're sitting there, no one would be thinking these were unidentified. They'd know what they were. They'd see them all the time. But in this country, perhaps it's a bit more unusual. So anyway, it's a new class of unidentified flying object, is the flaming lantern.
Was there a celebration, or was it coincided with a particular festival date or anything like that? Did you look?
I'm not too sure it was. I mean, I know that, as I say, I saw one on, it was right on New Year's Eve, in fact, this year in Manchester. I saw a sequence of them going up and heading across Manchester. This phone call was just earlier this week, so that's a few weeks after New Year, so whether, I mean, I guess they're the sort of thing people set off at weddings and things now, so, but I guess we'll hear about them. So if you spot them, that's what they are, I think.
Very good. Now, we have two questions from Mark Ashley. His first one goes as follows. I went outside on a moonlit evening recently and saw a fantastic halo and moon dogs around the moon. I think it's due to ice crystals in the atmosphere. I was wondering if other planets or their moons exhibit the same types of atmospheric phenomena that we see on the Earth. Not just moon dogs, but also sun pillars, sun halos, rainbows, etc.
Yeah, well... I mean, these things are beautiful things to see, and they are as he says, he's right, they are these ice crystals high up in the atmosphere, so it's basically like a rainbow effect. slightly different because they're ice crystals, but you see these sort of big lovely halos around the moon. I don't know whether you've ever seen one of these things.
Yes.
And you see sort of that there's a darker region inside the ring quite often, where there's less light coming through than there is just outside the ring, where it's been refracted away. So I would guess the answer as to whether you see these things in other planetary atmospheres, I don't see why not. If there's something that's going to form ice crystals in the atmosphere, of course, if the conditions are right for that to happen. I suppose one interesting question is, has anybody ever, have any of these spacecraft, for example, that are on Mars, these rovers, for example, ever taken a photograph that shows an atmospheric phenomenon like that? That might be,
yeah.
I'm not sure I remember seeing such a photograph.
I can't recall one either, but that doesn't mean they don't exist.
No. Nope.
So perhaps a quick internet search might turn a few up.
Yeah, well, if anybody spots one, perhaps they should let us know, but that would be quite a nice thing to see, wouldn't it?
There's no reason why these sort of phenomena shouldn't occur on other planets, so long as there's, as you say, some kind of atmosphere and the same properties of materials.
I mean, of course, you know, Mars, water, ice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no rain on Mars as far as we've seen, so we're unlikely to see rainbows.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, and maybe the question of whether you're going to get ice crystals in the atmosphere of Mars is water ice crystals sounds unlikely,
yeah.
Doesn't it? So, you know, we're probably, you know, that's maybe pushing it a bit to expect something like that. But maybe whether there's any other crystals that might be able to form that might do a similar job, I'm not too sure, actually.
Well, there's plenty of suspended dust in the Martian atmosphere, isn't there? So
yeah.
The...
Yeah.
Atmospheric phenomena that we see on Earth due to suspended dust, should see something similar on Mars, one would think.
Yeah. Anyway, worth keeping an eye out.
Mm. Read to this, I remember back in the day when I started playing around with computers, and the best things you could do with the computer was to program it yourself to do interesting things. Mm-hmm. So write your own games. You get the subscription to a computer magazine, and at the back there's usually listings of fun games you can
type in.
You can type it in yourself. Pages and pages of code in BASIC. And I remember one issue of one magazine. It was simulating rainbows on Venus.
Oh, right.
So it just said, well, this is the refractive index of what we think is in the... Venusian atmosphere.
Yeah.
Plug those numbers in, and this is what the rainbow would look like on Venus.
Oh, right. Okay. What did it look like? Do you remember?
I don't know. Actually, I forgot there's a bug in my program. I never actually got to work. But it was it's fairly straightforward to do these sort of things as a bit of a game.
Yeah.
However, there's all sorts of other details that we won't go into about the atmosphere on Venus being particularly thick and the light source quite diffuse it just goes on and on. But as young kid of about 10 or 12 learning BASIC, it was a great thing to do. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Very good. So, second question from Mark Ashley is about the solar analemma.
Hmm.
I saw a picture of one in a magazine and wondered what explains the geometry. It looks like a lopsided figure 8 leaning over to the west. So let's start off with what is the solar analemma?
Yeah, funny old name. What he's describing, he's the lopsided figure 8, what does it mean? Well, basically what's traditionally done with an analemma is to take a photograph of the sky with the sun in the photograph, in the field of view, at a particular time of day on a series of days through the year. So, you'd be lucky, certainly around here, if the sun was visible on most days in the year through the cloud. But basically you take a picture, every day as best you can at a particular time. So let's say midday, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And then, with your camera pointing in the same direction, same horizon visible basically, and you see where the sun is. And so you get a sequence of dots, if you like, the position of the sun, through the year at that particular time of day. Now, an easier way of doing this, if you wanted to try this at home, which doesn't necessarily involve having a camera on a tripod pointing in exactly the same direction all the time, you can do it with a stick, for example. You could stick a stick in the ground and look at the shadow cast by the sun, and say, for example, mark out where the tip of the shadow was.
Yes.
And you get the same sort of effect, basically. At the same time of day, you mark it, stick a peg in the ground or something at the end of the shadow at exactly the same time of day, every day as far as possible. Now, what you see, as is described, is a sort of figure eight shape, sort of often sort of tipped over to one side and skewed.
Mm.
So that's the analemma. Okay, so now we need to explain, having described what the analemma looks like, now we need to describe why it has the shape it does, this sort of figure eight shape. Now, for that, we're going to have to imagine a sort of picture in our heads of the Earth, orbiting the Sun and spinning on its own axis. So if we imagine, first of all, that the Earth is orbiting the Sun in a perfectly circular orbit, and we imagine for a moment that the spin axis of the Earth, sort of north-south spin axis, is perpendicular to the plane of the Earth's orbit. So if you imagine the Earth's orbit, if we're sitting this table in front of us here is a nice circular table, and the Sun's at the centre of that circular table, and the Earth moves around the rim of that table in a lovely circular orbit, and the spin axis would just stick up vertically out of the plane of the table. So the Earth spins around once in 24 hours, and basically we'd look at midday, we'd look at the Sun being sort of overhead. Midday, we look at that position of it in the sky, we see a dot. And then we wait 24 hours, the Earth moves a little bit round its orbit, the Sun would in fact be in the same position in the sky. After 24 hours, we'd see a dot in the same place. We wait another 24 hours, we'd see a dot in the same place. So in fact, the analemma for a situation like that, for the Earth in a circular orbit with the spin axis of the Earth pointed straight up, would be a dot on the sky. Very boring, not a figure eight at all. Now, one of the obvious things that's wrong with that picture is that the spin axis of the Earth isn't perpendicular to the plane of the Earth's orbit. We're tipped over by 23.5 degrees. So we've got to imagine taking our little spin axis now, tipping it over by 23.5 degrees. Let's imagine, let's think about what difference that makes. Now, imagine that it's midsummer for us in the northern hemisphere here. So the north spin axis, we're tipping towards the Sun, pointing directly towards the Sun. And we imagine again this position at midday, the Sun's, you know, depending where we are on the Earth, whether it's overhead or not, but we imagine where the Sun is at midday, sort of looking south at somewhere in the sky, quite high up for us, okay, because we're tipped over towards it. Now, very simply, you can understand the difference between midsummer and midwinter, because as the Earth moves around the Sun, then by the time we get to midwinter, the Sun is low down in the sky because it's actually over the southern hemisphere now. So you expect to see a difference vertically. You expect to see the Sun high in the sky in midsummer, very low in the sky in midwinter. So it explains why instead of having this single dot, we get this sort of motion up and down.
You're right.
Okay. But the question is, why do we get this motion east to west? Why is the Sun sometimes to the east of where you might expect it at midday, and sometimes to the west of where you might expect it? And it's that that results in the figure eight, because it's a combination of the up and down motion and the east to west motion maps out this figure eight shape.
In a situation where we've got a circular orbit, but the Earth is tipped over at a certain angle to the orbital plane, the analemma looks like a perfect figure eight. The top and the bottom lobes are exactly the same. So we're trying to figure out, well, as you say, we you know, it's a common thing to see that in summertime, wherever you are, the Sun is generally high in the sky at noon, and in winter at noon, it's sort of low in the sky. So there's the up and down motion.
But
we have to understand why is there some east-west extent? Why has it got a figure eight? Why isn't it just trace out a line in our simplified, non-elliptical orbit situation.
So let's imagine that we've got this, again, think about this, we're sitting in front of a table, we've got a circular table in front of us, we've got a Sun in the middle, we've got an Earth that's moving around the outer rim of this table, and we're looking down in it from above, where the northern north pole of the Earth is at the top of this thing, so looking down on the north pole of the Earth, if you like, but we've tipped over the spin axis to point towards the Sun at the moment, at the position that the Earth is in. We know that the Earth actually spins towards the east, so it spins from the west towards the east. So as we're looking down on the Earth at the moment now, the Earth would sort of be spinning anti-clockwise if you look down on it. And then actually it moves around the Sun also in an anti-clockwise direction. Okay, so it's this sort of prograde motion, it's called, where the Earth is spinning anti-clockwise as we look down on the North Pole, and anti-clockwise as it moves around the Sun. So now the interesting thing is, of course, what happens here is we think about the spin axis. The spin axis in midsummer is pointing straight towards the Sun. What doesn't happen as the Earth moves around the Sun is that the spin axis stays pointing towards the Sun. That wouldn't result in the seasons, for example. The spin axis stays pointing in basically the same direction in space. So from a position where in midsummer, where the spin axis is pointing straight towards the sun, as day on day, gradually the spin axis, if you can imagine this now, the spin axis would end up pointing off towards one side of the sun. And if you think about the direction of motion of the Earth relative to the sun here, then in fact the sun ends up farther to the east of where the spin axis is pointing, because of this motion, rotation of the Earth towards the east, and the fact that the Earth is moving around the sun's orbit in the same direction, in that sort of counterclockwise direction. You end up with the sun gradually being farther and farther to the east of where you'd expect it to be after 24 hours because of that offset. So in fact, going from midsummer, farther on in the year, towards the autumn, then the sun will actually move somewhat to the east of where you'd expect it to be. And of course then that doesn't continue because of the sort of circular orbit. It's got to come back to being where it was before. So you get this gradual drift towards the east, and then a gradual drift back towards the west again to its maximum offset, and then a gradual drift back towards the east as you head back through the year. So that's what explains this sort of east-west motion. The actual tilt of the Earth not only causes it to move up and down, but also causes this motion east to west, and that results in a figure eight. Now you get a bit of funny skewedness going on, some effects that happen there. In fact, because all this time we've been talking about a circular orbit, in fact the Earth's orbit around the Sun is elliptical. Now what that means is that the speed of the Earth actually changes as you move around its orbit. So when the Earth is actually closest to the Sun, it's moving faster, and so it moves a larger distance around its orbit in a day than it would do at times of year when it's farther away from the Sun, and that causes this figure eight shape to be somewhat distorted compared to a perfect figure eight.
Right, so the two lobes aren't exactly the same shape and size.
That's right. Yeah. So, but basically, it's interesting how complicated these things are. You know, when you look at them, because it's a very simple observation to make that you get this figure eight shape. I think the up and down motion is pretty simple to understand in terms of the tilt of the Earth's axis, but certainly it's not trivial to think about how the tilt also results in this east-west motion. But I hope I've done as good a job as we can do.
I think so.
To explain that.
So the summary is that the analemma has its shape because the Earth is tilted on its axis 23.5 degrees with respect to the plane of its orbit around the Sun.
Yep.
And, second thing, the Earth's orbit around the Sun is elliptical.
That's
not
right.
Circular. These two things are independent. I've actually noticed on the web there are some people who have computed what the analemma looks like if you were on Mars, for instance, or
right.
Pluto, and they look quite different.
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually a bit of fun. You can go check that out. We'll put some links on the show page. Oh, one other thing to mention is that the analemma is tilted in the sky depending on your latitude.
Mm.
So don't expect to see the same analemma in Greece as you would in New Zealand, for instance.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, thank you very much indeed for answering those questions. Thank you very much to Mark Ashley for sending in his questions. And do please continue to send in your questions to the Jodcast via the webpage at www.jodcast.net. You can write them on a postcard, you can send us a letter, you can jump onto the forum and ask your questions there. You can give us a call or send us an email. We'll accept your questions any old way, and we'll endeavour to answer them as quickly as possible.